Welcome back to Travel Today and Yesterday, a podcast that's all about travel all of the time. I'm Cassandra, and I'm here with my husband and co-host, Mike. We're starting a new series all about state parks. If you've listened to our podcast before, you know that Mike and I love the outdoors and we love visiting national parks, but we really enjoy state parks.
And often when we move to a new location, one of the first things we'll purchase is a state park pass, just so we have that option to go see the different parks whenever we want.
And there are just shy of 7,000 state parks in the U.S.
And interestingly enough, the first one was Yosemite, designated in 1865, and it was 15 years later that the government designated Yosemite as a national park, which was the third national park at the time.
Yosemite, or Yosemite, as I only too recently figured out it was not called. I thought it was two different parks, Yosemite and Yosemite. So that's why we wanted to do a series just to go state by state and highlight some of the best state parks that we found, some of which we've visited, and then others that we've just read about, hope to visit someday. One thing we learned when we were researching this series that I thought was really interesting is that even though state parks are independently funded by each state and definitely unique to each state, there's one board with representatives from every state who get together and talk about the different programs they're doing and different initiatives, which is why no matter what state you're in, a lot of times you see a lot of the same types of programs across all state parks. And those similar initiatives that all the different state parks share is what makes them so important. The number one being conservation.
Yeah, they play a critical role in maintaining healthy ecosystems and provide reliable sources of clean air and water,
which in turn then creates a safe habitat and often a refuge for all types of wildlife. And then people are able to go to these state parks and be educated on these different plants, on conservation, on all the different types of wildlife that live there.
And the history of the state.
And the history of the state a lot of the times. So a big source of education for the public definitely comes from state parks, and it goes a long way, I think, in helping to reduce pollution, to protect the environment, and to give people in general a greater appreciation for animals and for different plants.
For wild spaces.
Well, and that's another big thing that all state parks are meant to do, which is to provide a safe environment where people, no matter what their physical abilities, are able to get outside and enjoy the outdoors and be active. And they particularly provide a lot of education and information and activities for kids, which I think is really great, especially as we've moved into a more technology heavy era in society, to provide a place for kids to get outside and play and enjoy learning about the outdoors is one of the biggest things that I think state parks do.
And to start young so they grow up with that appreciation and continue to take care of the environment. We decided to do Colorado first in this series for two reasons. First, because we're about to move out to Colorado for the summer and we wanted to research the state parks a little bit more, but also because we lived there for a few years and we've enjoyed the parks while we lived there. Colorado has 43 state parks, and we are not going to talk about all of those, but we are going to highlight a handful of them.
And we mentioned that we always like to purchase a state park pass when we live in a new state, and that's just because it makes financial sense. If you're going to go to more than one state park or go to a state park more than once, you're probably going to find for a family of four that you're paying the same amount for two visits that you would pay for an annual pass, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. And every state has different prices to get into their state parks, different prices for their annual passes. Some states actually don't charge you at all to go to state parks, which I think is amazing. We have not lived in one of those states, but I hope to at some point. But for Colorado, it's $80 to get a state park pass that's affixed to your vehicle. It's so you can't transfer it, but it's good for an entire year and it'll get you into any state park as many times as you'd like. Now for residents, and I think they just started this in 2023, it's called Keep Colorado Wild. When you renew your registration, which you have to do every year in Colorado, for $29, you can get a fixed vehicle pass.
And that
It's right on your registration sticker.
And that is, you can only get that when you register your vehicle at that time. If you don't do it, and actually, I think it's done automatically.
It's done automatically unless you opt out, but then you're getting the state park pass for $29 instead of $80. So you don't have to get it, but you'd have to tell them if you don't want it. And then if you want to get a pass that you can actually transfer between vehicles, it's $120.
So if you're living with a couple of roommates or something like that, you buy that one pass and whoever wants to take it just hangs it up in their window and can go to the park for that day.
Now, one really cool thing that Colorado does, and there might be other states that do this as well. We haven't gotten that far. We only researched Colorado for this episode, but anybody with a library card in the state of Colorado can check out a state park pass for a week. And with that pass, you can go to as many parks as you want, as many times as you'd like. And that pass that you check out even comes with an adventure pack. This was my favorite part. I thought this was really cool, but it comes with like a pair of binoculars, a wildlife viewing guide, a tree and wildflower identification guide. And then you also get like a parks brochure and a suggested activities list. And then they also put in a copy of their Leave No Trace Outdoors Ethics Principle, which a lot of the states actually use. That's one of those shared initiatives, just educating people about keeping the parks clean and keeping nature clean in general. But I thought that was really neat that Colorado does that. One, in case people want to check out the different parks and see if they want to purchase a state park pass, but also to make it so that people who maybe don't have the money to buy a state park pass or even pay the entrance fee for a state park are able to still get to enjoy the park.
Every park in every state is known for its beautiful spaces, and Colorado is no different. What makes Colorado so special, though, is the large number of different wildlife species that live in the parks, including over 400 species of birds. Also, the topography in Colorado varies drastically. If you've never been to Colorado, the eastern half of the state is flat prairie. I was actually surprised the first time I drove out there because it was 2 hours of driving before you hit the mountains. Everyone knows about the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, but the western slope and the eastern half past the Continental Divide are also much different. The western slope of Colorado is known for its wineries and its ability to grow grapes. The eastern half is not nearly as wet because most of the storms as they go up over the mountains, all the rain falls on the western side of it. Down in the southwest corner, you have the Great Sand Dunes. So you have prairies, sand dunes, mountains, wine growing regions. It's really diverse. And that's why you have so many different wildlife species, because of all the different terrain.
Another thing that I thought was really cool about Colorado is that they do so many events at their state parks. Pretty much every month of the year, there's at least one festival going on. And I just thought that was really cool that they had so many different events. There really is a little something for everybody at state parks, no matter what activities you're interested in. If you're somebody who really loves nature and wildlife, it'd be really hard to find a Colorado state park where you wouldn't be able yeah. to find something you enjoy, just because they do have so much different wildlife and a ton of really unique plants. But there were a couple parks that really stood out to us. Bar Lake State Park in Brighton, Colorado is definitely a great place to go if you're into wildlife, particularly bird watching, which, by the way, in Colorado is a huge thing because they have all those different species of birds and because of the migratory patterns. So Colorado state parks are really great for that, but Bar Lake State Park in particular is really popular. It was established in 1977. It's 2,715 acres. And part of the reason that it's so popular for wildlife lovers is because they have this huge lake, and a large section of that lake is off limits to boats and water sports. So it's become an animal refuge. They have this really expansive boardwalk with beautiful gazebos and benches that takes you all through the wildlife refuge. And there's over 371 species of birds that have been spotted there. It's actually a place that bald eagles like to go in the winter. And there's even one pair of bald eagles that returns every single summer to nest and raise their young. And then they also have a park-facilitated osprey nest where you can watch from the beginning of the life cycle on. And then they have two really big festivals there. They have a fall birding festival when the birds are migrating, and then they have the bald eagle festival every year.
Another park that's really popular for the nature and wildlife lover is State Forest State Park in Walden, Colorado. The park was established in 1970, and it's actually Colorado's largest state park at 71,000 acres. And just like the topography in Colorado varies, the topography in this state park alone is incredibly diverse. You have jagged peaks, alpine lakes, cold sand dunes. There really is so much to see in this park for the nature lover. The park's actually right next to Rocky Mountain National Park, another popular park in the state. And there's a pass in the southeast corner of State Forest State Park called Thunder Pass that allows you to travel between the two parks on foot. What makes the park so special, though, is that back in the 70s, a handful of moose were transplanted from Wyoming and Utah for breeding. Currently, Colorado has 2,000 moose within its state borders, and 600 of them are in this park alone, and it's actually the moose viewing capital of Colorado. Besides the moose, though, you can see bighorn sheep, mountain lions, black bears, foxes, elk, and deer.
And I don't know if you've ever seen bighorn sheep, but I was pretty blown away the first time that I did. It was actually in Rocky Mountain National Park, and those big sheep stand right on the sides of those mountains. I don't know if they just have the world's tiniest, most powerful little feet. It was pretty awesome to see them.
Yeah, it's really impressive when you see them running up and down those steep cliff.
It seems like their giant horns alone would be enough to weigh down their head and tip them over right off the mountain, but they seem to know what they're doing. And then because Colorado state parks have so many rivers and lakes and reservoirs, fishing and water sports is another hugely popular activity. You can actually fish in 38 of Colorado's state parks. But the one that really stood out to us for fishing was Navajo State Park. I'm pretty sure I'm going to mispronounce this, but it's in Arbolis, Colorado.
Arbolis, Arbols.
And it was founded in 1964. It's often compared to Lake Powell. So it has 15,000 surface acres of the Navajo Reservoir, which actually extends for 20 miles south into New Mexico. It's 35 miles long total. And then it has about 150 miles of shoreline that straddles Colorado and New Mexico. There's 3,000 acres just on the Colorado side. So fishing is a really big deal there. It's known for rainbow and brown trout, greenback, cutthroats, walleye, perch, pike, bass, and just a ton of other different kinds of fish. And you can fish from that 150 miles of shoreline, but if you want the bigger fish, they also have boats that you can rent or fishing charters that go out, and you can go out deeper and fish. And that's where you can get things like salmon, northern pike, and trout, and some of those get really big. And then the Navajo Reservoir actually provides the principal storage for the Navajo Indian Irrigation Project, which sends water to 110,000 acres of agricultural land on the Navajo Reservation.
Another popular park for fishing and water sports is Lathrop State Park in Walsenburg, Colorado. This is actually the very first state park that was established in Colorado, and it was founded in 1962. What makes this park special is that there's actually two lakes there, and it's the only state park in Colorado that has two separate lakes. The park itself is 1,500 acres, and it sits in the shadows of the Spanish Peaks. The first lake is more popular for water sports and swimming. It's Martin Lake, and it's a warm water lake. You can rent jet skis, but it also offers water skiing, power, and sailboating. There's actually a big swim beach, and it's located in southern Colorado between the foothills and the plains. So the water is fairly warm in the summer, especially as far as Colorado goes. It can get up to 75 degrees. You can fish in that lake, but the more popular lake for fishing is Horseshoe Lake. This lake does not allow any motorized boats. You can kayak or sail in it, but what it's known for is its large tiger muskie population. And these apparently are incredibly hard to catch.
I think we've mentioned at least six times that we love camping.
Yeah,
But
I
we're
think six times this episode.
but we're not the only ones, and camping is incredibly popular in Colorado state parks. There's actually over 4,000 campsites between all of the parks, and I don't think you could go wrong in any of the parks with camping. But since we are trying to highlight different parks, we just picked a couple that we thought were really unique or great for camping. The first one is Steamboat Lake State Park, which is in Clark, Colorado. It was established in 1966. It's just over 2,800 acres. And out of that 2,800 acres, there's an 1,100 surface acre reservoir. You're at about an 8,000 foot elevation, and it does have 188 campsites, typical campsites with the picnic tables, the fire rings. They've got great amenities. They have a full marina there, so you can buy like wooden ice and some snacks and things like that, the things that are super important when you show up at a
Yes, you must
campground.
have 8 bags of chips per person.
They do have restrooms and showers, and then they have 12 of those sites where you can hook up your RV. What I think stands out with this park is that they actually have some RV hookups that are available in the winter time. And what we've learned so far since we've been in an RV is that depending on where you are in the country, it can be really hard to find a place for your RV in the winter time. I mean, down here in southern Florida, they're pretty much everywhere. We're surrounded by three RV parks, but in a lot of places on the East Coast and in the Midwest and out West, depending on the weather, they're not so common. They also have 10 cabins that you can use for winter camping if you don't have an RV. And a lot of people like to go there for snowmobiling and ice fishing, which I am not a huge fan of the cold. However, I'm obsessed with the idea of ice fishing. I don't know why. I feel like in reality, I might not like it as much as I think I would.
Well, it's because everyone that has told us when they ice fish, they drink a lot of whiskey while they're fishing. So I like fishing. I like whiskey. It just stands to reason that I would like ice fishing.
I just feel like it would be a really unique experience to go ice fishing. So I'm pretty obsessed with that idea. I would definitely like to try it. But that's really popular at Steamboat Lake State Park because they do have that huge reservoir. And then they also have a really nice swim beach as well. So if you're not there during the winter, that's really great too to be able to camp and then go down and swim in the lake. So their summer camping is from May till about mid-October. It's kind of weather dependent, and we always say for Colorado, if you don't like the weather, just wait 5 minutes because it does change pretty quickly. And then they offer backcountry camping as well in the surrounding Forest Service land. So if you want to do the hike-in backcountry primitive type camping, you're definitely able to do that as well. Another thing we haven't done along with ice fishing that we'd really like to try doing.
Well, we did drive-in backcountry.
We have never done primitive camping. I don't think we've ever camped without a cooler. So that's not primitive.
Next park is considered a hidden gem by many as far as the Colorado state parks go. Rifle Falls State Park is located in Rifle, Colorado. It's a very small, very quiet state park. It's actually only 48 acres. Because it's so small, there's not a lot of campsites, and the amenities are pretty basic. There's 13 drive-in RV or tent campsites that offer picnic tables, electric hookups, and fire rings. And there's also a restroom nearby. It also has 7 walk-in campsites that are closest to the creek. Those provide tables, fire pits with grills, and also bear-proof food boxes. What makes this park so special is that there is a triple 70-foot tall waterfall and limestone caves, and it's the only one of its kind in all of Colorado.
And you can actually explore the limestone caves and go behind the waterfall and everything. It's really neat. And for the people who camp along the creek, you can actually hear not just the creek going by, but you can hear the waterfall at night, which probably makes it worth it despite the bears that you need the bear-proof food boxes for.
Or the fact that you have to pee all night long.
Yeah.
Because Rifle Falls State Park is so small, it does not have its own visitor center, but there is one located 4 miles away in Rifle Gap State Park, which is a much larger park.
And we say that the amenities are basic, but we don't mean that in a negative way at all. They're simple, but you have everything you need. And that, outside of the waterfall, is what I think makes that park so special, is that it's small and private, and you don't have a lot of crowds, a lot of campsites. You really can actually get out and just enjoy the peace and quiet in nature. And then we can't talk about Colorado State Parks without talking about my old arch nemesis, hiking. We have a love-hate relationship. Actually, some of the best hiking I've ever done was when we lived in Colorado. I really enjoy it. I think the weather has a lot to do with that. It is not humid. It's very dry. The lack of bugs, because you're at such a high elevation, definitely enhances the hiking experience for me. But there's fantastic hiking all over Colorado State Parks. A great park for hiking is Golden Gate Canyon State Park, which is in Golden, Colorado. It was established in 1960, and it's over 12,000 acres, and they have over 40 miles of trails of all different intensities. Probably the best part about it, though, is that if you go up to the Panoramic Point Scenic Overlook, you have 100-mile views of the Continental Divide, which is pretty awesome. And then, of course, they have tons of wildlife and plants all along their trails. And the elevations range from 7,600 feet to 10,400 feet. With those 100-mile views of the Continental Divide and that really high elevation, Golden Gate Canyon State Park is really popular with what they call leaf peepers, the people that want to check out the fall foliage. And then the thing that I really like about it is that you do have those hikes of different intensities, because everybody has different abilities. Mike likes to do really intense hikes. He wants to feel the burn. I would much prefer a hike that's maybe a little bit less intense. It can still be challenging, but a little less intense, so that I can breathe afterwards and don't need a helicopter to airlift me out halfway through. But with 40 miles of trails, you're definitely going to be able to find a hike for everybody.
The next park isn't as big. It's Roxborough State Park in Roxborough, Colorado, and it was established in 1975. The park is just over 3,400 acres, and it provides 15 miles of trails. The most popular trail is the trail going up to Carpenter Peak, which is just over 6 miles to an elevation of 7,129 feet. The park is known for its massive redstone monoliths that date back over a billion years, but what makes it so special is it's located where the mountains and the prairie meet. This gives it a high level of biodiversity with tons of animals and plants to see while you're hiking. It's actually listed as a Colorado Natural Area and a National Natural Landmark. And just like Golden Gate Canyon State Park, this state park also offers a variety of different hiking intensities.
Our last couple of state parks are for the thrill seekers out there. The Arkansas River Headquarters Recreation Area is a 150-mile stretch of the Arkansas River between Leadville and Pueblo. It was established in 1989. It's over 6,000 acres, and it definitely has world-class fishing, great camping. You can even pan for gold there. But the thing it's most known for are the rapids.
Hopefully you're not panning for gold as you're going down the rapids.
Just hold your little pan out and drag it along. So the Arkansas River is one of America's most popular rivers, and it's the most commercially rafted river in the United States. It has class 1 to 5 rapids. But one of the reasons I think it's so popular is because while you can do class 5 rapids a lot of places, like we did class 5 rapids in Maine, we talked about that in one of our other episodes, the Arkansas River has a lot more consecutive class 5 rapids. So there's a few trips and sections of that river that are pretty intense. You have to be really experienced to raft there. I don't know that we would consider ourselves experienced enough for that after one time of doing class 5 rapids in Maine. But it's actually not that far from where we're going to be this summer. I would love to have the opportunity to actually raft the Arkansas River, maybe one that's like class 3 to 5.
Well, and I do remember that we did go tubing on the Arkansas River near Pueblo, but there were no rapids to be had at the time we went.
Not in the tubing section, no. But people do. They come from all over the country and the world to raft the Arkansas River, and particularly at Arkansas River Headquarters Recreation Area. So it's a big deal.
And if rafting isn't your thing, rock climbing is another popular activity in Colorado. El Dorado Canyon State Park is located in El Dorado Springs, Colorado, and it was established in 1978. The park is only 900 acres, but it offers over 500 technical rock climbing routes. The most popular is the Rupert Climb, which is rated at 5.8. This park offers some of the best rock climbing in Colorado, but it's actually one of the most accessible rock climbing areas in the entire world. It's located just about 30 minutes outside of Denver. Outside of the sheer number of routes that it has, the climbs offer amazing views of the Continental Divide, which is another reason that it's so popular.
As always, thanks for listening to this episode. We really hope you enjoyed learning more about Colorado's state parks. I do need to make a small correction. Earlier in the episode, I referred to the Arkansas River Headwaters Recreation Site State Park as the Arkansas River Headquarters Recreation Site. That was not correct. I did that twice at least. So the actual name of that state park is the Arkansas River Headwaters Recreation Site. As usual, we'll post any important links, extra information, and some photos on our website, which you can visit at traveltodayandyesterday.com. And we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at traveltodayandyesterday@gmail.com. We're actually going to be taking a brief hiatus from recording the podcast just because we are moving out to Colorado. And for the next month or so, we're going to be traveling and visiting with friends and family. So our next episode will actually be on May 8th. But in the meantime, we have a couple of really fun projects that we're going to be working on, and we will be updating our social media and our website. So be sure to subscribe so you can follow along with those adventures and so that you don't miss our next podcast on May 8th.
Thanks again, and we'll talk to you in May.